12:37 on the Afternoon Magazine as we take a look at the weather. Wet weather right now and forecast to stay wet through tomorrow. Wet and windy as well. Light showers continue to move through central and southeast Illinois this morning, bringing a few hundredths of an inch of rainfall. We might have a little more than that now. A low pressure system over the Tennessee Valley is expected to intensify and move north into Indiana throughout the day. The proximity of the low will bring gusty northerly winds and scattered showers to much of the Midwest east of the Mississippi River today. The rain will diminish tomorrow from west to east as the low pulls away. Mostly cloudy skies are expected west of the Mississippi. Throughout the region, highs today will remain in the upper 40s to low 50s across the Midwest. Low temperatures overnight will range from the low to mid 30s in central Iowa and Missouri to the mid 40s. In Indiana, there is a wind advisory in effect in our severe weather coverage area. It began at noon and it runs until 10 tomorrow morning. The forecast for Champaign-Urbana, Danville, and Monticello, occasional rain today, the high 48, very windy, northerly winds at 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts to around 45 miles per hour. Rain tonight, the low 38, very windy again, northwest winds 25 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to around 45 miles per hour. Rain likely tomorrow morning, then a chance of rain tomorrow afternoon. Windy again, northwest winds gusting to around 40 miles per hour, the high 48. Mostly cloudy tomorrow night, the low 35. Sunny on Friday, the high 55. Then Friday night, mostly clear, the low 35. For Saturday through Sunday night, partly cloudy, highs of 62 and lows of 42, settling into more sunny weather on Monday with a high of 65. Next chance of showers coming on Tuesday. Right now we have rain with some fog at Willard Airport at this hour, 44 degrees. Northerly winds at 28 miles per hour, gusting to 39. In Decatur, there's light rain and 35 degrees. Northerly winds, 26 miles per hour, gusting to 35. Danville reports light rain and 45 degrees. There's rain and 45 degrees at Mattoon. It's cloudy and 49 degrees at Springfield and 42 degrees outside our studios at Friends Plaza in Urbana. And the time coming up on 12:40 on the Afternoon Magazine. Reporter Anna Badkin visited the Southern Illinois University Carbondale campus this month to share her experiences there covering the people of Afghanistan and other war-torn countries. For Illinois Public Radio, Jennifer Fuller talked with the Pulitzer Center reporter about her work.
Speaking with Pulitzer Center journalist Anna Badkin. Anna, thanks for coming in. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, you came in and spoke as a guest of the Global Media Research Center, the School of Journalism, Radio Television, as well as the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting here at SIUC. What are some of the perspectives that you bring to the students and to the community in terms of Afghanistan and your coverage?
I think that the conversation I try to have is a conversation about what it is like to actually live in Afghanistan. We very often see the battlefields, particularly of American wars, through the gunsight of American troops. A lot of the coverage that we have here in the United States focuses on the battle itself. What is very often omitted or overlooked is that 28 million Afghans actually live in that battlefield, and they're much more than just two-dimensional stick figures that sort of move across this Central Asian landscape. So what I try to do in my reporting, and this is what the conversation has been about for the most part, is how to give voice to these, how to fill out these two-dimensional stick figures and make people here realize that there are people there.
What kind of challenges are presented when you have to immerse yourself in the culture? What did you do to prepare?
I read a lot of books. It's not so much a bureaucratic process as just a process of ingratiating myself to my hosts.
Did you find them to be wary at all? Did they welcome you? What was the reaction when you arrived?
I've been covering Afghanistan for 10 years, so you meet different people everywhere. Most people in the world will want to take in a stranger and help you out and feed you and provide you shelter, which gives me great hope in humanity.
This is not the first area of conflict that you've covered in this way. You mentioned that this gives you the hope in humanity. What parallels do you see in covering places like Afghanistan and some of the other locations where you've been?
What I do is write about people who live on the edges of the world. So people who, without somebody from outside coming in and transmitting their voice, if you will, would be voiceless. So this is what I do. I come in to a place where most journalists don't travel because it's either too dangerous or too far away or not expedient or doesn't fit into a 20-second soundbite that unfortunately we're getting used to here in this culture, and spend time with them and hope to tell their stories in a compassionate way.
Is there one story that stands out to you as one that you're either truly proud of or you think tells the story in a unique way that people may not have that perspective of?
I've been doing this for 16 years. I think each story is unique, of course, and each story hopefully brings the world a little closer.
What do you think are some of the barriers in terms of the people in the United States, in this Western culture, in understanding what's going on in those areas that are behind the front lines that maybe we don't see every day?
Our maddeningly short attention span. We seem to have no patience for the nuanced. We seem to expect black and white, and life is not black and white. So there seems to be very little patience for anything that is not either a gratuitous violence or a feel-good story. And most of the world is not like that. Most of the world is a daily struggle. But also a lot of beauty, a lot of kindness, immense generosity that we share with each other.
Your perspective is one that we in the United States don't see very often. I wonder how you feel about the future of journalism when we see so many media organizations cutting back on their international coverage and trying to do more with less. Are you optimistic about the future?
You know, I think we live in interesting times. It's very difficult right now to predict what will happen with the media. It's changing so rapidly. I do think that people will continue to want to hear stories. This is what we've always done. This is what we do in the evening. We gather around a fire. We gather around a dinner table. We gather around a dastarkhan or a loaf of bread and tell stories to each other. So there is a need, I believe, to hear stories, and therefore there is a need for storytellers, which is what I am and what my colleagues are. The format in which we do it may be changing, is changing. I have no idea what storytelling will look like in 5 years or 10 years. I'm a very old-school storyteller. I write stories. Sometimes they're magazine stories. Sometimes they're books. But I do believe that there is, and maybe this is, I'm just thinking about this way to make myself feel good, but I do believe that there will continue to be a need for storytelling.
Absolutely. Getting back to your work in Afghanistan, you've been in and out of the country and in and out of these areas for so long. What are the people of Afghanistan asking you to tell the rest of the world about them?
They say, tell them that we have no clean water. Tell them that we're dying of preventable disease. Tell them how difficult our life is. So there is there are a few statistics that I can throw at you. In Afghanistan, 1 out of 4 children doesn't live to the age of 5. The statistic has not changed in the last decade. And we're talking on October 7th. This is the 10th anniversary of the U.S. invasion. So these 10 years have not changed that. 1 in 8 women still dies at childbirth. Life expectancy for both men and women is about 44 years. 30% of Afghans have access to clean water, which means 70% do not. I think access to sanitation facilities is something like 15%. This is what my hosts and my fellow travelers in Afghanistan want people to know. They need help.
Do you have suggestions for ways for people to get involved, to be more informed?
Read.
Are there sources that you would send them to that you feel like paint an accurate picture? Obviously, the Pulitzer Center is a good place to go.
I would say definitely read the Foreign Policy magazine. It's a great publication. Read the New Yorker. Read the New York Times. Listen to NPR. The Pulitzer Center has fantastic stories on it, and I'm not talking about myself. There are, you know, hell, use Google.
I wonder, too, and we just have a minute or so remaining. When you deal with heartache and with such devastation, you still say that you see that hope for humanity. Do you still see the hope in people's eyes that they truly believe things are going to get better, or is despair growing? What is their outlook on the future?
Afghanistan has been at war since the beginning of recorded history. So it's very hard to gauge in just a decade whether despair is growing. There definitely is a very strong sense of hopelessness. But at the same time, how hopeless can you be when you bear a child? How hopeless can you be when you cook dinner for your friends? How hopeless can you be when you fall in love with somebody? So there are definitely, you know, we're all humans and we remain